This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, is...
Suzanne Williamson.
Well, today, we are going to be discussing the fourth season Voyager episode, Message in a Bottle. Well, Suzanne, are you ready to dive into 2019, a newborn year filled with courage, armed with years of experience?
Well, you would be the one with years of experience. I would be the newborn filled with courage. Ha ha ha.
There's no need to throw my age up in my face, Suzanne.
Before we start, I do want to say something, just in case some listeners haven't heard. If you're not on the Babel Conference or on Twitter, To the Journey was lucky enough to win a Parsec Award for 2018, which is a big deal in podcasting. So I just had to toot our own horn, in case you hadn't heard. Toot!
And we want to give an enormous thank you to the original hosts of To the Journey, Charlene Schmidt, Tristan Riddell, and Laurie Sears. We would not be here, and To the Journey would not be what it is today without their original work on To the Journey, and we owe them a huge debt of gratitude. So thank you very much to all three of you.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm a little surprised, Suzanne, that we haven't talked about Message in a Bottle yet here on To the Journey.
I'm sure we've touched on it in different episodes, but this is our first time just diving in feet first, seeing what we can talk about with just this episode.
This is one of my absolute favorite episodes of Voyager. I can rewatch this again and again. I never skip this one. I will always watch it. I will always be in the mood for it. And comedy in Star Trek is a little hit and miss. Sometimes it works really well, and sometimes it kind of misses the mark. I think this one is completely on point.
It is spot on. You couldn't have gotten a better EMH Mark II than Andy Dick. No one else could have done that.
It's like watching a classic comedy duo of Laurel and Hardy or Abbott and Costello. It's Frasier and Niles from Frasier in space.
It is, and I didn't realize that until you said it. It is totally Frasier and Niles, and that's probably why I like Andy Dick a little more in this episode, because he would be more like Niles, and Niles was always my favorite.
Yeah, they essentially nattered each other for 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's exactly what they did.
It's like on Frasier. You wouldn't think anyone would be able to out Frasier until you saw Niles. You wouldn't think anyone would be able to out EMH the Doctor until you see the EMH Mark II.
Yes, very much so.
But rather than talking about the EMH and the EMH Mark II right off the bat, I want to talk a little bit about Seven and B'Elanna.
Okay. What about them?
When I rewatched the episode before we recorded, I was surprised at how much I really enjoyed the little scenes that other characters have, even though the Doctor and the EMH Mark II basically get all of the screen time in this episode. I love the dynamic that's set up between Seven and B'Elanna. B'Elanna's ready to murder Seven of Nine, and Chakotay has to kind of talk her off the cliff.
Well, to be honest, she's always felt that way about Seven. And I don't think she got any respect for Seven until this episode where, you know, Seven zaps the Hirogen on the other end of the line.
It was a truly Klingon maneuver.
It was.
And I like that B'Elanna basically tells Seven, you're rude.
The way she says it is perfect, too. It's just, you're rude. With that dramatic pause in between.
And Seven is like, I'm rude? Like, she just doesn't understand the concept.
Well, she doesn't understand much about interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, she has to learn that those dynamics are important. They don't exactly become best buddies by the end of the episode, but I think you're right. I think Seven moves up a notch in B'Elanna's estimation by the end of the episode. I think that's right. Maybe to like the first third of the episode, you know, when she sends the shock.
Yeah.
But as much as I love the B'Elanna-Seven dynamic that emerges in this episode, I actually love the Chakotay-B'Elanna dynamic that emerges in this episode. I like that Chakotay basically has to tell B'Elanna, look, you're a senior officer on this ship. Act like one. Find a way to deal with her.
It's about time someone told her that. I mean, honestly.
This is one of my absolute favorite Chakotay scenes because he's absolutely right. Sometimes people just need to be told, grow up, you're an adult, act like one. And Chakotay basically has to say that to B'Elanna. Stop whining about Seven, you're an officer, act like one. I think it's a totally respectable thing for him to tell her.
I would love to be able to say that to a few people.
I guess my point is just that it's growth for B'Elanna as well.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Because she is whining, essentially, and she has to learn to just deal with it.
Just suck it up.
I was trying to think, Suzanne, is this the first time we see the Hirogen?
I'm pretty sure.
As owners of this gigantic communication network?
Well, as anything, I think this is the first time we see them at all, or hear of them. And to be honest, the Hirogen that they show on screen did not look very tall.
It's one short Hirogen?
Maybe that's why he's manning the station, is because he's not tall enough to be a hunter.
So the short Hirogen are the ones that get desk jobs?
Yes.
Essentially?
Yes.
White collar Hirogen.
Exactly.
I was actually really struck by how enormous that communication network really was. It takes up like a third of the galaxy.
It was huge. It was like a weird looking spider web.
Yeah, how could the Federation not have known that an enormous sensor network, a third of the size of the galaxy, exists? Especially when it's on the edge of Federation space.
It is on the edge of Federation space. Maybe it's just that one or two little stations that are there that are probably so small that they didn't even think they were anything. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm going to veer into nitpicking mode a little bit, but what exactly is a prototype vessel doing out on the very, very, very edge of Federation space?
So nobody sees it.
Oh, so they're out in the backwaters, the backwoods.
Yes, doing a dry run on the ship.
Whatever the space equivalent is of the backwater.
The back 40, I don't know.
Yes, they're cruising on the back 40, yes. And while I'm in nitpicking mode, I want to talk a little bit about why on Earth a holographic data stream would degrade less quickly than a regular subspace message. This makes no sense to me whatsoever. A hologram has like a gazillion times more data than a regular subspace message. How on Earth would it degrade less quickly?
Because it has so much data. It's chock full of stuff, chock full of nuts. It's going to take less time for stuff to, you know, fall off here and there.
No, that's not how communication works. Usually, communication methods that convey less information are more reliable, like Morse code compared to a voice signal.
That's how it works on this relay. That's all I can tell you. The more dense the information you're sending, the better chance it's going to get through, or at least some of it.
Hmm. What if some of the doctor got lost en route, like some of the additions to his program?
Or what if he just had one leg when he showed up? Would he be able to create another one?
Can't you repair a hologram anytime that way? Just replace the missing subroutines?
I would think so, but I'm not a holographic expert like apparently Harry is.
Like a holographic organ farm?
Ew, that's kind of gross.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Harry. I love this idea of designing a better doctor.
Should we give him more hair?
Better personality, more hair, nicer demeanor. And I love Harry's response. Like, I can't just design a new doctor. It took, you know, the best holo engineers in Starfleet years of work to design the doctor. And you want me to do it in a week?
Well, they've already done the hard work. All he has to do is, you know, look at what they did. Come on, Harry, do it.
Upload Grey's Anatomy and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And I know we're just talking about little things, but one of my favorite little scenes is the new prototype replacement doctor reciting Grey's Anatomy while Harry and Tom are talking.
Oh, yes. Because Robert Picardo, he do not see his facial expression change. That had to be so difficult.
He just keeps going and going while all this conversation is happening around him. It's amazing. I don't have that degree of concentration. I don't know anyone that does.
Is it professional? Acting.
That, my friend, that is acting, yes. So all these nitpicks aside, the Doctor ends up on the Prometheus, mm-hmm. intact. All of his parts and organs and holographic subroutines are intact mm-hmm. on the Prometheus. And the Prometheus is one of my favorite starships in all of Starfleet. Mm-hmm. I think, you know what I think I like about it? And it's what I like about Voyager compared to Deep Space Nine, even though I love Deep Space Nine. I love the set design in Voyager. It's bright. It's friendly. It's yes. warming. Even though it has sort of gray tones compared to the Next Generation, it's an overall bright environment. And the Prometheus makes Voyager look like it's Deep Space Nine. It's super bright.
Voyager's pretty bright until they go to red alert, and then it's dark as the Dickens, which I don't quite understand and never have. But yeah, the Prometheus is very brightly lit.
Yeah, it's like a proto-iBridge from Star Trek 2009.
Without the lens flare.
Yes, without the lens flare. But I do have some nitpicks about the Prometheus.
Okay.
Namely about this multi-vector assault mode. Does each portion of the ship have its own battle bridge or something? You know, who is in command of each section when the computer's not running the ship?
I would say they're all connected. There's no
so
way
the computer is.
Yeah, there's no way for the computer to give up.
Because I had envisioned like a backup command station, a backup bridge or a battle bridge, essentially, on each of the three pieces.
I didn't see it that way.
You're like, no, this is the 24th century. It's automation all the way down, baby.
I want a ship with multi-vector assault mode because you don't really have to think about targeting or anything. Just who are we shooting at? Romulans. There you go.
Romulans, yeah, right.
To go back to something you said about the Doctor and his additional mm-hmm. subroutines, why did they even have to mention that?
Because it's comedy. There's no practical reason. This is a comedy episode. It's just for the laughs. That's the only reason.
I understand it's a comedy thing, but I didn't laugh at that. I was just like, so he has sex. Does this really need to be something we're sharing with everyone? No. And then, of course, Andy Dick was like, can you make that addition to my program, too? Like, come on.
Maybe it's just a tongue-in-cheek way of showing the Doctor's development, but a pretty lowbrow one, admittedly.
Yes, very lowbrow. Well, since we're mentioning all these little side parts of the episode that we liked, I do have to say that this episode has changed the way I say a specific word from the moment I saw it.
Dare I ask?
Oh, come on.
Thrombic?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
Jalapeno.
Yes.
I no longer say jalapeno. I haven't said jalapeno in years, but I say jalapeno. I need more jalapenos.
I guess that's the point I was trying to make at the beginning of the episode, that even though this is a hugely Doctor-centric episode, a lot of other characters get great little comedic moments.
Mm-hmm. They do. Thank you, Neelix, for changing my vocabulary. For the better.
You'll never look at a jalapeno the same way.
I will never. But I do have a question. Why was Neelix focusing on classic American cuisine as a marketable job skill in going back to the Alpha Quadrant? Why classic American cuisine? Why not Chinese, Japanese, or Vulcan? Come on.
I think that the culinary tastes will continue to degrade for the next three or four centuries. And by the 24th century, it'll only be classic American that's left. You know, all other cuisine will have gone by the wayside.
So pot roast, pot pie, apple pie.
Yeah, every restaurant is Taco Bell, essentially. Yeah. It's the Demolition Man problem.
That's disgusting.
No, it'll be like in the 24th century in the Federation on Earth, it'll be like, where shall we go to dinner? Let's go to Kentucky Fried Chicken.
So they'll actually go back to calling it Kentucky Fried Chicken instead of just KFC?
Oh, yeah. I'm old enough to remember before KFC. Yeah, right.
back to the armed with years of experience.
Yes, which sometimes can be a handicap, yeah. But time has marched on while Voyager's been in the Delta Quadrant. Medical advances have taken place. The Doctor didn't seem to know what a thrombic modulator was, the cone-shaped device, according to Andy Dick.
He made the same guess that I would have made, because that little round thing just screamed thrombic to me for some reason. I don't know.
And I love Bob Picardo's physical acting. He doesn't really say anything. He just goes, but he holds up the wrong device and goes, this one? This one? The look on his face says, I'm out of my element, even though I'm the chief medical officer on Voyager. It's an interesting role reversal for the Doctor, because usually the Doctor is the one who takes the position of authority and is a little arrogant, and to have someone else be a little more arrogant than the Doctor is hilarious. When the Doctor's out of his element, like, which one is the thrombic modulator? I don't know. The one-upmanship in this episode between the two EMHs cracks me up.
It is good. Now, I do have an odd question. Do you think that the EMH got a commendation for getting the Prometheus back to the Federation? Or were they just like, thanks. It could have been both
which
or either.
EMH? I would say that probably the EMH Mark II is the most likely candidate, because he's still there in the Alpha Quadrant, so better in a position to be recognized.
They can make a note on the Doctor's record. They know Voyager's coming back.
Oh, when they get back. Okay, like, so years later he gets a commendation.
Or they could have, it would have been years later, because they didn't consider him a person until after the Hollow Novel incident.
I'm curious why the Doctor didn't get drafted into performing manual labor now that he's back in the Alpha Quadrant. Like, oh, great, good, another EMH Mark I. Now we can put him to work mining dilithium or whatever the EMH Mark I's are doing these days.
Well, I'm sure that once they heard that he is Voyager's only Doctor, they weren't going to keep him.
I guess that's true. That's a good point. What if Tom had to become the chief medical officer after all? I think that's a hilarious idea.
I think he would have jumped ship.
I'm kind of sad we didn't get at least one episode of Chief Medical Officer Tom Paris.
Then instead of Harry whining all the time, it would be Tom whining all the time. I want to fly the ship.
Yeah, can't they just patch a helm control down into sickbay? Can't he fly the ship from there?
Don't you really need to see where you're going? Isn't that why they have the view screen?
Yeah, but he doesn't need the enormous view screen. He can just have a little 8x10 view screen there in sickbay, and he can drive from there, like from a laptop or something.
Okay, so why don't you try that with your car, get back to us, and let us know how it goes.
So you're not too keen on the idea of Tom flying the ship from sickbay? I think that's a fun idea.
No.
One thing is for certain, though. Tom had his fill of treating upset stomachs from Neelix's jalapenos.
Yep.
So this episode is kind of a turning point for Voyager. Voyager finally makes contact with the Alpha Quadrant via the Doctor, of course. Janeway expresses at the end of the episode that 60,000 miles seems a little shorter
light years
today than it did yesterday.
Light years.
What did I say?
Miles.
Miles? Did I say miles?
You said miles.
Did I really say miles? 60,000 light years. Yes, excuse me. This is space. This is not. 60,000 light years. Excuse me.
It's like, what are they complaining about? They're only 60,000 miles away. What? Come on. It is a very touching ending when the captain says, you know, what she says about the light years. It kind of grabs you. It's like, aw. She's not alone. She was never alone anyway.
Well, it kind of re-energizes everyone, you know? They've made contact with home, you know, they can send their letter. Well, no, they didn't send letters yet, right?
Not yet. No, but they found out also that their families were told they're dead 14 months ago.
Right. So all their families are happy and relieved and got a pleasant piece of news. I would just imagine this has a pretty profound psychological effect on the crew, right? Would be re-energizing.
Definitely.
I like that Chakotay and Janeway are talking about the letters that they're going to send back to the Alpha Quadrant. Chakotay sending one to his cousin in Ohio, if memory serves. And Janeway's sending one to her family. She didn't say who specifically, and one to Mark.
I just like their interaction. She's shyly telling him, you know, I'm sending one to Mark. And he kind of gives her a look and she gives it back. Because there's something shared between them there, yes. No matter what anybody says.
And it shows they trust each other, right?
Exactly.
They've opened up to each other. Right. Janeway's, you know, confiding in him to some degree.
Exactly. And then, of course, Chakotay comes clean and says, yeah, I'm writing a letter to my cousin in Ohio. And she smacks him like, you're giving me a hard time, smack.
He's like, what's that? Letters home? Yeah, I'm writing one, too. I wonder if anyone else is writing one. No one else mentions writing a letter, right? It's just Janeway and Chakotay talking about it.
Well, Tom has his letter that he's composed.
Oh, yeah. He's got his letters to his dad, right? Letter or letters or whatever that is.
And I'm sure Harry has, like, journal entries for his mother or something.
Yeah, probably. So this is one of very few times we see the Romulans in Voyager. In fact, maybe it's only the second out of two times. Right? The first time is Eye of the Needle.
Yes.
And is this the only other time we see Romulans? That's right, isn't it?
I do believe so.
Two times we see Romulans in Voyager. What do you think of Romulans in Voyager? I think Eye of the Needle didn't really work for me from a Romulan standpoint, and here the Romulans kind of work for me.
I liked both sets of Romulans. For me, you can't go wrong with a Romulan. They're my favorite.
Romulans!
Yes.
It's a fine line to walk, because if they veer into the Alpha Quadrant too much, it starts to feel a little too much like Star Trek The Next Generation, and a little too familiar, and it loses its identity as being Voyager in the Delta Quadrant with all of this unfamiliar stuff. So I can see why writers wouldn't go there too much.
Then why did they keep going there with the Ferengi?
Undoubtedly, the Romulans work better on Voyager than the Ferengi do. Yes, undoubtedly.
Romulans are more fun in an odd kind of way.
In a way, this episode is very much in line with Gene Roddenberry's view of Star Trek as a wagon train to the stars. It's like being on the Oregon Trail getting attacked by Indians. You know, there's the ship and it's out on the frontier and they're being attacked by Romulans that are taking over the ship. This is a wagon train to the stars. This is Cowboys and Indians. That's exactly what this is.
Okay.
No, really, that's what Gene Roddenberry had in mind with Star Trek. He described it as a wagon train to the stars, right?
I understand that. I just don't see this episode as being that, but okay.
No, it's like us versus the Romulans that are taking over the ship. You know, they kind of came out of nowhere and took over the ship, killed a few people.
Okay.
This is an interesting episode to talk about, Suzanne, because it's not a very complex episode. It's basically the Doctor comedy show. There are a bunch of great little character moments along the way. But in a way, this episode is completely symbolic of what I love about Voyager, the show. It's lighthearted. It's fun. You can relax, enjoy it, laugh along with it. You get some good family moments between members of the Voyager crew. It's just a lighthearted, fun episode. There's nothing deep going on in this episode. It's just fun television.
There is, and there's still a little action. So if you want action, you got a little action. So it covers pretty much everything. It's a good episode. I like it.
Before we wrap up today, Suzanne, I do want to point out that this episode has what is, in my mind, one of the absolute funniest one-liners in all of Star Trek, when the Doctor says to the EMH Mark II, "Stop breathing down my neck," and the EMH Mark II says, my breathing is just a simulation," and the Doctor says, "So is my neck. Stop it anyway."
That is a good line, but it's not my favorite.
No? Do you have a favorite from this episode?
I do.
This is a comedy.
It would be
episode?
The EMH Mark II saying, "I'm a doctor, not a commando."
Oh, yeah. Good harkening back to the original series, too, with "I'm a doctor, not a fill in the blank. I'm a doctor, not a commando." Good one. Nice harkening back to the original series.
But to be honest, our EMH does that a lot.
He does. Does he say that more than once? "I'm a doctor, not a
I know he says it like a handful of times.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what some of the others were. I can't remember any off the top of my head, but you're right. Now that you mention it. Well, Suzanne, it's been fun ringing in 2019 and talking about Message in a Bottle today, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on the network, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
I really hope they made an announcement to evacuate the forward part of the saucer section.
Well, he instructed Troy, and so she would, of course, given the command silently.
Yeah, but there was no time. There was no time.
Yeah,
it didn't seem like there was much time.
No, there wasn't.
She did it. Don't even question it.
Be prepared to do it. And like 30 seconds later, they were ramming the thing.
Yep, plenty of time. Okay. Those people serving on board, they know. If they say move, you move immediately.
Literary Treks.
I love that it's not just, you know, Keith DeCandido is playing the long game here, and we get these threads woven through all these stories, and it's not just, you know, dumped on you all at once. It's a really nice, slow, methodical way to tell a story, and I'm loving it.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
He's equating survival with winning, but again, because we know the end, he needs to survive and not die in the war so he can get back to the Mirror Universe. And I just love seeing that.
Yeah, it's great, because if you just see this on the surface and don't know the ending, it's true.
Warp 5.
Problem with Section 31 is it is not an official organization. It is extra legal. It does not answer to any authority. It does not answer to any oversight. Officially, it doesn't exist.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party podcast apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. Best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it'll come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek.fm show and select To the Journey. That'll come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/Trek.fm. So, Zach, when you're not accidentally putting the ship into multi-vector assault mode, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatreks, Trek.fm show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me in there, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And how about you, Suzanne? When you're not busy composing a letter to your cousin in Ohio, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me popping up now and again in the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8.
Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We do have a few people we would like to thank. The first being the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, C. Brian Jones, who is really Rodeo Red of Rodeo Red's Red Hot Rootin' Tootin' Chili. Executive producers Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shematala, our Patreon manager. Also a very big thank you and shout out to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, Norman Lau. Thank you for your continued support of To the Journey and Trek FM.
Well, be sure to join us next time when we will be reciting Grey's Anatomy from memory. But until then, this has been To the Journey.